I'd like to call to order the July 16th, 2020 TPA Governing Board meeting pursuant to the Governor's Executive Order Number 20-69 and TPA Emergency Order Number 2020-03. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend the meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will use to use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernible difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Instructions to join this virtual meeting as well as contact information for a TPA staff member to assist you are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some of the governing board members are attending the meeting in person, TPA board members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely, either via webcam or telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the executive director will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. And I encourage all of you to have your cameras on if you have that available, please. Before we begin, I will summarize our public comment procedure for this virtual meeting. Written documents, comments, and questions may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments can also be made through the Zoom webinar platform. When you wish to be recognized, please use the raised hand function within the Zoom platform and then wait to be recognized by the chair. And Margie, you will help me with this, correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we will unmute you will be unmuted by the meeting host. Lastly, any in-person visitor may submit a comment card available at the welcome table. I have asked Mayor Wilson to open our meeting in prayer and then to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mayor Wilson?
Good morning. Let us pray. Oh, Heavenly Father, we are before you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts, thanking you over and over and over again for your grace and your mercy. Realizing, Father, that through your grace and your mercy, you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. And with that, we say thank you. Thank you, Father, for a life of hope for now and forever. Father, you know the challenges we are faced with today. And we know that there's nothing too big or too small for you to handle. You are the source of every blessing in our lives. Help us to never lose sight of that. Not only during the bad times, but during the good times as well. We ask a special blessing for our chairperson this morning and all of us whom you have allowed to be assembled here today, realizing that we're no strangers to each other, but perhaps friends who have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
And to the Republic which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you all. Margie, would you please call the roll? Make sure we have a quorum.
If I have any members that are muted on their end, we're going to unmute you, and then if you could unmute on your end as well. Joseph Anderson or Catherine Waldron, I believe Commissioner Waldron should be present.
Margie, could you speak just a little louder?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mary Lou Berger?
Here.
Joni Brinkman?
Alternate Doug Gunther, present.
Joel Flores?
Present.
Stephen Graham?
Present.
Jim Koretsky? Present. I'm sorry. You have to turn the microphone off. Okay.
Present.
Shirley Lanier? Maria Marino?
Here, thank you.
Melissa McKinley?
Here.
Michael Napoleon?
I'm here.
Corey Nearing?
Here.
Joseph Peduzzi.
Alternate Christina Lambert here.
Charlie Petroleum.
Here.
Craig Pinto.
Here.
Scott Singer.
Here.
Andy Thompson.
Thankful to be here.
Pam Triolo.
Here.
Al Valachain.
Here.
Robert Weinroth.
Here.
Greg Weiss.
Here.
Steve Wilson.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. May I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Weinroth moves.
Do I have a second? I'm sorry. Did I hear?
I have a second. I have Weinroth as a first. I'll
second. Hal is a second. Thank you, Hal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from June 18th, 2020?
So moved, Singer.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, so we are now at item F, which is comments from the chair and members. I just want to thank you all for being here in whatever form you are here in today. And as you know, we will not be meeting in August, so we'll see you again in September. Please pay attention to what's going on in the community. And I know that our school board and our county commission have been working very hard. And please note that all of our staff are working very hard. We were on a League of Cities conference call yesterday, and I think that people at home think that governmental staff is not working, but I know you're working probably harder than before. So I just want to thank our staff and the staff at the county and the school board and other municipalities who have government workers. I just want to say thank you because we know what they're going through right now, especially trying to put a meeting together where you've got 25 different people and 25 different cameras, plus we have cameras right there in the TPA office. So thank you very much all. And if any other board member has a comment for the board, please raise your hand and utilize that function. And Margie, would you help me with this? Because I actually don't see that function on my screen.
Yes, ma'am. And it should be, I believe, in the panelists. You have participants at the bottom. At the bottom of the participants window, there should be a raise hand function.
Okay.
And we do have Jim Kretzky with his hand raised in our office.
Okay. Mr. Kretzky?
Yeah, just quickly, I wanted to bring up an item. Referred to it as a safety initiative that I do think that the TPA could assist on and may benefit other jurisdictions. You know, I've advocated for a number of years that with first of all aboard Florida and but now, you know, Brightline and you know, renamed Virgin. It's when it comes to North County in the town of Jupiter, it's gonna be traveling at speeds at 110 mile an hour crossing certain intersections. In between intersections, and then it slows down to go across the Loxahatchee River Bridge. But I've advocated, as others have, for a sealed corridor, you know, because I don't think it's not all people, you know, trying to commit suicide. It's people won't be able to judge a train moving at 110 mile an hour when they cross. So we think this is pretty important in the town. I'm grateful that Brightline has agreed to put fencing in some areas. I don't think it goes far enough. And rather than really, and we're going to pursue with them, but the logical place for some for that fencing would be within the FEC corridor. And I know that there's sensitivities in different jurisdictions about, you know, about landscaping impacts. But if we could get FEC to generically agree to allow a fence to be put in, that's really the most challenging piece of it, and that would then be optional in each jurisdiction. Then each jurisdiction could at any point in time when we've experienced either proactively before or after an event could quickly move to get fencing installed to protect the public, which is, you know, our, I think, government's, you know, number one role on safety. It's just an ask I have. I did talk to our executive director beforehand, and he thought maybe this could be something that could get some help on. But again, I'm not forcing it on every government that has property along the corridor, because it may not fit everybody. But I just know that if we were to approach it individually, it's like an act of Congress to get the approval for that. So why not get it approved generically, that, because we all want to protect the public. Hopefully Brightline feels the same way. And then, you know, it's an easier thing to put a fence in. So that's just an ask I have. I don't expect we're going to talk about it here, but I did want to make that ask officially and recognize Brightline for agreeing to put in some fencing.
Thank you. And Nick, I'm sure you'll get together with Mr. Dukretsky and see what questions can be asked and answered.
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Do I have any other raised hands?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have Commissioner McKinley, followed by Mayor Petrolia, and then Commissioner Weinroth.
Perfect. Okay. Commissioner McKinley.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I just a quick comment. Recently, State Representative Matt Wilhite and I sent a letter to the FDOT regarding the safety of the construction sites along Southern Boulevard. They're doing daytime construction, they're doing nighttime construction. There doesn't seem to be any consistency in how they mark those construction sites. The traffic patterns are always changing. As you know, Representative Wilhite is also a captain in fire rescue. He said there's been a number of pretty serious accidents through some of those construction sites. So if it's okay with Nick, I'd like to get a copy of that letter that we sent to DOT, and maybe the TPA could back us up on that request to make their construction sites a little bit safer.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, quickly in response, I did receive a copy of that letter earlier this week, and I'd be happy to circulate it to the board and follow up with District Secretary Jerry O'Reilly and the construction oversight staff at DOT on those questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Mayor Petrolia.
Thank you very much. First of all, I just want to say hello to everybody and hope everybody's doing well and your families as well. I just wanted to follow up on Mayor Kretzky's suggestion. We had a couple of deaths in our area due to people trying to cross the railroad tracks, especially down closer to the Atlantic Avenue, where it's very, very busy with a population of pedestrian traffic in our area. We ended up having to erect fences because we could not get the Brightline or anybody at the FEC to erect the fences. But we did it because of the safety reasons, especially in areas that are heavily pedestrian crossed, where it's illegal to do it, but you know that it's happening. You can put a camera out and see how many people are actually crossing illegally in certain areas. Adding those fences has helped our situation out tremendously. So I support moving forward on anything that we can do to prohibit or help to eliminate anybody getting hurt. Because again, these trains are coming through much faster than trains in the past. And these are not the suicide, attempts. These are actually people who are, you know, walking across the tracks, not recognizing that the train was bearing down on them as quick as they were and were not able to get out of their way. So anyway, I do support it.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I do not see any other hands raised. And I, Margie, I think you said someone else had their hand up. So,
yes, Madam Chair, Commissioner Weinroth.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two things. The Board of County Commissioners met this week and approved the mid-year adjustment to the five-year road program, which is in tandem with the resolution that we'll be dealing with today as far as the list of priority projects for 22 to 26. There were 20 delayed projects that we approved, and it was a total mid-year adjustment of $270 million. Municipal leaders should consider reviewing that list to make sure that the projects within your district are being moved along to your satisfaction. Also, just for a point of information, the Board of County Commissioners and Palm Beach Gardens had a meeting, and we are still in discussions with respect to the issue of impact fees versus mobility fees, and that matter will probably continue on as long as our conversations about State Road 7. Other than that, Madam Chair, I have nothing else.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, so I will now invite Nick to give his executive director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Members of the Palm Beach TPA gathered here and abroad. It's good to be with you this morning. A handful of items I wanted to review with you. First, we have an advertisement out for general planning consultant services, a request for proposals. The proposals are due to the TPA this next Monday, July 20th. And we would encourage you, if you have any private sector connections, to make them aware of this opportunity and encourage them to submit if they are interested in supporting the TPA's work as we do transportation planning for Palm Beach County. I want to make you aware that I-95 Woolbright Road intersection is, or interchange, DOT is hosting a project development and environmental study. So what they're doing, reminder, PD&E is the first phase prior to design, prior to right-of-way acquisition, prior to construction, where they're looking at what should be built to accommodate future travel demands at that interchange. They're going to be conducting an online public workshop on July 22nd. That's going to happen at 5 p.m. We have a hyperlink in the report that will allow you to join that workshop, as well as a website that will allow you to obtain additional information. For folks in Boca Raton, the A1A Haven Ash Bridge is going to be undergoing significant maintenance, bridge painting, as well as some above water maintenance. And it's going to result in a full closure of that bridge. That's set to begin August 1st. There is a public meeting, again, a virtual public meeting on July 23rd to explain that information a little more fully. And wanted to make sure that the folks in Boca Raton, as well as people traveling in that area, are aware of that and the detours that will result. And then Atlantic Avenue 995, Mayor Petrolia, this is your area. A new lane configuration opened just this week. The northernmost westbound travel lane, the outside westbound travel lane, is now an exclusive on-ramp for access to northbound and southbound I-95. Want to make sure that travelers are aware of that modification to the interchange in that area. Next item is an encouragement to our local communities to continue to push for the, and Alyssa, you can jump to the next slide for me. It's an encouragement to our local communities to continue to push for responses to the U.S. Census. Encourage everyone to fill out that census survey. We're only at about 60%. And as a reminder, this impacts federal transportation funding that will be available to our county based on our population. So we really want to make sure that the survey information is accurate and reflects the number of people that live here, because those are the people we're planning for and trying to accommodate in the investments that we make in our transportation system. I want to remind our governing board members that we did promote and publish our interactive comment map last month, and that we would encourage you to point people to this as an online opportunity to submit input to the TPA, help us identify issues, hotspots, things that we need to pay attention to with respect to transportation infrastructure. That website is available at palmbeachtpa.org/comment-map. And then again, want to encourage our governing board members in specific to consider attending a online conference in these coming months. We have assembled a list of transportation-related national conferences that are happening in the next few months that are online. Our strategic plan encourages you and, in fact, directs me to pay for you to participate in these kinds of events. And so we'd love to have as many of our elected officials as our scheduling permitting enabled to attend one of these events to take advantage of this. I want to mention that our statewide MPO group is scheduled to meet on July 30th. We're still discussing whether that meeting is going to be permitted to happen virtually. I know Commissioner Weinroth has been a strong advocate for getting permission from the governor's office through some sort of a determination or a modified executive order that would allow a statewide group like the MPOAC to meet in a virtual capacity instead of assembling in person in Orlando. We're working through the details of that right now. And then also in the interim period when we won't have a TPA governing board meeting or committees, we are scheduled to have a SEFTEC, a Southeast Florida Transportation Council meeting. That's the formal partnership between the Broward MPO, the Miami-Dade TPO, and our agency. That's scheduled to happen on August 7th, and that meeting will include the endorsement on a regional scale of our regional transportation plan, which is essentially a compilation and assembling of the three locally established long-range transportation plans that were recently adopted by all three of our agencies. That's scheduled to occur on August 7th. As a reminder, there are no governing board or advisory committee meetings in August, and our next board meeting will be held on September 17th. And then one item I wanted to mention that I had omitted from this report, but thinking about the intergovernmental dispute process, Commissioner Weinroth reminded me, we are scheduled this afternoon to have a discussion with the, a formal mediation meeting, rather, with the City of West Palm Beach regarding their challenge of the TPA's long-range transportation plan amendment that was adopted in February. That mediation meeting is a private meeting. It's not a sunshine meeting. Only our chair, Vice Mayor Marino, and I will be attending, as well as our legal team on behalf of the TPA, and only one elected official, Mayor James, as well as staff from the City of West Palm Beach will be participating in that meeting. But I did want to let the TPA Governing Board know that that meeting is happening this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Madam Chair, I think that concludes my report. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Nick. And we don't have any comments from about your report, do we? Public comments?
No, Madam Chair.
Do we have any questions from our board members? I do not see any hands raised, if I'm doing this correctly. Okay. All righty. Now, would any board member like to remove an item from the consent agenda?
Oh, I'm sorry.
H3. Okay. All right. So may I have a motion? No, excuse me. Paul. Remind me what the procedure is here.
What you can go ahead and do is approve the consent agenda that has not been withdrawn and take a motion on that, and then you can proceed to take up the item that's been withdrawn if you wish.
Thank you very much. Okay, may I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda with item H3 pulled?
Madam Chair, agenda items H1 and 2 are moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Motion carries. Discussion on item H3.
And I have Jim Kretzky with the same race.
Okay. Mr. Kretzky?
Yeah, I just pulled this. I really felt if I didn't do so, I'd be remiss in filling my role here. I just want to reflect. I think it's important to conduct an annual performance review, regardless of whether there is or isn't any merit increase adjustment. And I think it's just kind of ironic that the timing fits right in. We have a strategic plan that we set for each year, and then we get a report card. So here we are right before us, you know, the results of that. And I know it's always awkward. The most awkward thing I find about government is in fact doing a performance review for an individual in public. But I also have always, and to this day, the TPA, how it functions, how we function as a group, I always think is just incredible. With our differences that we have, how we come together on so many things and do work collaboratively, and in large part, our executive director helped make that happen. I know we have conflicts, but I did want to reflect that. So I just thought it was unusual for me that we weren't doing, you know, maybe people realized the strategic report card evaluation was in review. But since it wasn't stated as such, I wanted to just reflect on that myself. That, yes. You know, the success we, in, you know, Vice Mayor Marino, Chair, you had mentioned about how government really is really still working well. Perfect example here is the fact that despite what we've been through, here we were able to achieve most of what we had set out to do, and that's commendable. And as a minimum, I just wanted to say thank you to the executive director for his leadership here. I just thought it was, again, unusual just to kind of maybe pass by a whole year. So that's why I pulled it.
Thank you. Actually, Nick and I have sat and talked about this for a long time, many times. So, Jim, thanks for bringing it up and pointing out that, Nick, actually, you've done a great job. You've juggled a lot of balls over the last year. And I guess I quietly always thank you for this, but publicly I'd like to do so also. And if there's anyone else that would like to comment, please raise your hand. Any hands raised? I can't see any.
I don't see any hands raised.
Thank you very much. So may I have a motion and a second to approve item H3?
So moved.
Thank you. So I have a motion from Ms. Pampriolo, and I think I had a second from Hal. Is that correct?
I had, yes.
Okay, perfect. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Let's see. We are on to general public comments. I don't believe we have any general public comments on items that aren't on the agenda. Is that correct?
No, Madam Chair. And I'm just double checking that we don't have any hands raised in our attendees list. So no public comments. General public comments.
Okay, so we're going to move to action items and action item 2A. I would like to invite Andrew Euler to TPA Deputy Director of Program Development to present this item to us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be presenting on the list of priority products for fiscal year 2022 to 2026. And by Florida statute, the TPA is required to adopt a list of priority projects that we then send to the district for their development of the upcoming FDOP 5-year work program for fiscal year 2022 to 2026. So what you'll see in this list and in your backup is the list of priorities of the projects of ones that we directly fund. So this is coming from funds that we directly prioritize. So when I go through this, I'm only going to be covering the highlights that we have for you from current products on the list. Any changes to those, and then I'll be highlighting any new products on the list. So to restate our mission, to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. So through the planning process, we have our long-range transportation plan. We also identify projects through our local initiatives and transportation alternatives program. And now we're at the stage of prioritizing those projects, and then they are funded through the FDOT work program and subsequently also the transportation improvement program. Here's a timeline that you have all seen before. This is the timeline for fiscal year 2022 to 2026, a road to adoption of our transportation improvement program. And it all really starts today with our list of priority projects. So that's what we do here in July. And then it makes its way through FDOT, and then you all review it, and then we have a final adoption of a transportation improvement program in June every year, which goes into effect July 1st. So we are now, as it started July 1st, we're operating under the fiscal year 2021 to 2025 transportation improvement program. So this is really going into next year's tip. So I'll be covering the three main priority project sections that we have, state road modifications, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. The first one, state road modifications. These come from long-range transportation plan line items, and then also applications that we get for multimodal products on state facilities. This is predominantly funded with state funds, and it's roughly around $20.5 million a year. Then I'll be going through the local initiatives, which are annual competitive application process for multimodal products on county and city facilities. And these are mostly state surface transportation funds, for federal surface transportation funds. And so we typically see around $22.8 million a year. And then lastly is transportation alternatives. And that's another competitive application process that we have. for non-motorized projects. It's smaller in scale than the local initiatives and it has roughly $3.1 million a year from predominantly federal funds. So I'll be going through some highlights for all three of those sections. The first is state road modifications, and these main highlights are providing your backup. The first one involves US 1 multimodal corridor study projects. So this is a series of projects that are line items in the priority list. And many of these originated from our US 1 multimodal corridor study that was completed about 2 years ago. The first is a deletion of a project that's currently on the priority list. US 1 repurposing from Albemarle Road to Okeechobee Boulevard. After we rescinded their approval of this being a lane reduction, and so when the city of West Palm Beach has EPTA on board with the lane repurposing, they can reapply to be on the list of priority projects. The next is to fund enhanced transit shelters throughout US 1 to advance that project. And then there's the advancement of multiple lane repurposings in the city of Boca Raton, West Palm Beach, North Palm Beach, and Lake Worth Beach. We are also requesting the FDOT to accelerate Atlantic Avenue widening from West Lyons Road to Jog Road. And then we also have a series of projects on Okeechobee Boulevard, one being an enhanced transit shelters from State Road 7 to US 1. And then we have for FDOT to also fund the street lighting on State Road 80 from State Road 15 to County Road 880. And the status of this one is FDOT's currently doing the warrant study that should be completed at the end of this month is the expected time frame for that. And then FDOT is looking to come to you all, the board, in September to discuss the findings of that warrant study. And lastly is to fund transit signal prioritization on Lake Worth Road corridor, which is one of the other enhanced transit corridors identified in our long-range transmission plan. On the list, you'll see 8 new projects. These are going to be showing up in the bottom of the state road modifications list. So it typically goes in order of the year it made the list and then the priority ranking for that year. So these 8 new projects will be at the bottom, and they are Federal Highway at Spanish River Boulevard in Boca Raton, and that's to add bike lanes in a Mastodon conversion. There's a series of Palm Beach County and Boca Raton signal projects, and these are our two signal maintaining agencies within the county, and these projects encompass 36 intersections total over 3 projects, and this is to replace span wire with mast arms and steel string poles. Next is a series of State Road 715 projects related to sidewalks, lighting, and buffered bicycle lanes. There's 3 projects total, and State Road 715 is one of our state roads out in the western portions of Palm Beach County. So through our long-range transition plan, we identified pedestrian sidewalk gaps and also bicycle gaps, and so these sort of originated off of those analyses. Next is the Lake Ave and Lucerne Ave in Lake Worth Beach. And this is to add stamped concrete crosswalks, replace sidewalk pavers, and improve drainage within a current resurfacing project. So every time that we see a new resurfacing or bridge modification in the work program, we look into seeing how we can also try to incorporate other types of improvements while they're doing those maintenance projects, whether that be complete streets, safety improvements, or other types of improvements. And this is one of those projects that is up for resurfacing. Next is the local initiatives projects. This is an annual competitive application process. Some changes to the existing projects and the list of priority projects is we are maintaining all the current ones, and they're all moving forward. 2 changes I wanted to mention were adding $565,000 to the FEC railroad safety infrastructure projects, which begins around West Palm Beach and heads north to the county line. There's also an acceleration of connection of the town of Palm Beach traffic signal network. As I mentioned before, Palm Beach County is the main the main entity to manage our traffic signals here in the county. This would connect 4 signals of the town of Palm Beach to the county's traffic signal network. It was originally scheduled a few years out of this, but the town of Palm Beach requested to try to accelerate the this project. Palm Beach County Engineering stated that they're able to also able to implement this more quickly. And then FDOT also stated that they have the funding available to implement this more quickly. So this is moved to fiscal year 2022. And then we have four out of the five new applications that we received that we are able to fund, and we have two transportation alternatives projects that we're going to see if we can add to this local initiatives list as a recommendation. So these are the projects that originated from the 2020 applications that we received, and I'll be going through them each individually. The first is Palm Train for electric buses and charging stations at their maintenance facility. So this is for four electric buses total. Next is a passenger rail car for SFRTA, tri-rail service. They're also requesting, this is at $2.5 million, they're also requesting funding from Broward MPO at the same amount of $2.5 million. Next is Lake Worth Beach, has Southeast Coast Street and South 8th Street, and this is a reconstruct roadways to one-way pairs with four-foot designated bike lanes. And then the next one is Greenbrier Boulevard from Aero Club Drive to Greenbrier Shores Boulevard to construct four-foot designated bike lanes. And this is in the city of Wellington. This one, you'll see an asterisk next to its TPA score. Our overview in our local initiatives and transportation alternatives programs has a recommended threshold of 25 points or higher to be included on the list of priority projects. So we have roughly $22.8 million of available in federal funds to go towards priority projects per year. Based on our applications, we're not currently at that $22.8 million mark. So CPA staff, since there's funding available, we're recommending inclusion of this project on the list of priority projects. And then the next two are projects that originated as applications in the Transportation Alternatives Program. The Transportation Alternatives Program, which we'll see in the next slide, has a cap of around $3.1 million. There was more projects applied for than funding available in that program, and there was funding available here in local initiatives, so we've had committees recommend moving these two ones that were not going to be funded in transportation alternatives and move to local initiatives. So if we move forward with these two on this local initiatives list, they do come from a different stipulations and eligibility requirements at the federal level, but the TPA staff will work with FDOT and see how we can make sure that these get funded. So next is that Transportation Alternatives Program. This is for those small-scale, non-motorized transportation projects. We're maintaining all the existing projects within the priority list. They're all moving forward. Here's the top four new projects that were funded for this last round of applications, so the first time you're seeing them. The first ranking one is Lake Worth Beach, and this is ADA improvements and sidewalks and curb arounds throughout local roads within the city. Next is Palm Beach Gardens, applied for Kyoto Gardens Drive from Military Trail to alternate A1A, and this is constructed 5-foot bicycle lanes and 8-foot pathways on the north side of the roadway. And then Westgate CRA applied for Cherry Road from Military Trail to Quail Drive, and this is for multiple pedestrian safety improvements along that corridor. And then Palm Train applied for multiple bus stops to provide ADA bus stop enhancements. And that's all really I have for you. I can take any questions related to the presentation or any other products that are outlined in the packet.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I do have questions and hands raised.
Okay. Do we have any public comments before we do that?
I do, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, I'm going to mute someone because I'm getting some feedback here. Okay. So my first public comment is from Michael Sands, located in Eagle Point Drive, Delray Beach. His comment or questions, will there be a representative? Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. We're on 3A. I do have one for, I'm sorry. Sir, is this for the current item or for a different item?
It's just a non-item. I don't think it's on the agenda.
Okay. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. There is someone in person, and they have a general public comment. I'm not sure if you want to hear that or if you want to
general public comment on this item or on items not on the agenda?
Items not on the agenda. He just gave me a public comment card.
That's a little out of order, but at the moment, what I'll do is, can we finish this discussion and then we'll come back to that?
Yes, Madam Chair. So no public comments were received on this one, but I do have in order Shelley Petrolia, Greg Weiss, Robert Weinroth, and I do have more, but I'll list them once we get through those three.
Okay. Mayor Petrolia, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you so much, and I wanted to say thank you for all the work that's been done, FDOT on, Atlantic Avenue. It's been a long, long haul, but it's great to see that the actual turbo lane is now designed and, people are using it. So thank you, Nick, for bringing that up. Also, we're, very appreciative of the work being done for the sidewalks and resurfacing on Swinton. That's underway currently. Thank you for that. I wanted to just mention and ask this question because I'm not aware. Well, I am aware, but I don't know if it's correct. We are looking at purchasing, and we are on the schedule for purchasing the replacement trolleys next year. The city commission has come together on several different occasions looking to try to change out the old tight trolley with something that's more environmentally friendly. We had one that, you know, the ones that we had were diesel, not even gas, but diesel operated, spewing a lot of, diesel fumes along Atlantic Avenue. We decided to reroute them because of that. And we were thinking we would like to go into something that would be more environmentally sound, like electric or whatever. But it sounds to me, when speaking with our city officials or city staff, that that's not possible in this particular replacement of trolleys, that there are so many parameters that it almost forces you into the old style trolley. Is that true? And is it something that can be changed, or is it something that's kind of set in stone? And I might have asked that a long time ago, but I don't recall the answer. So, and you don't have to answer that right now if you don't have that available, but certainly if someone could get back with me on that, I'd appreciate it.
This sounds like a longer discussion. So Shelley, why don't you and Nick get together and see what you can come up with?
Will do. Thanks so much.
Madam Chair, if I could give a quick response, just because I think it is valuable to other agencies that might ask for the TPA to help them with transit funding. The quick answer is we are only able to give you funding through Federal Transit Administration, so through the FTA, which means that any vehicles that you buy have to comply with federal purchasing regulations. The longer answer that I will work with the mayor on is that we will certainly push on the DOT as the pass-through, or the in this case, I think it's actually going to be the RTA, the Tri-Rail, as the pass-through agency. We will push on them to give you as much flexibility as you are seeking in the kind of vehicles that you are purchasing with that federal money we provide to you, but we are constrained by federal regulation.
Thank you for that, and that answers the question. I will I'll have the staff discuss it further with you and how we can actually accomplish that. And I know that there are some other municipalities that also had purchase for trolleys as well, so it probably applies to them as well. Thank you again.
Thank you. Good question, Commissioner Weiss. You're up next.
Thank you. Good morning. My question is, you know, and looking at, first off, there was a lot of really great projects on the list. And so thanks for everybody's hard work on that. Really appreciate, too, the efforts related to enhancing our shelters and so forth for PalmTran, and especially with the ADA assistance. But my question is, and I was noticing as we were going through, there's a lot of roads going to be opened up for various projects. Are we working with the school board or some other, maybe even the county, in regards to getting wires run for Wi-Fi connectivity? One of the things that's come out of the last few months is understanding we have a lot of disconnected people in broadband in the county, even in our urban areas. And so I wondered if there were, you know, as I noticed you're doing some other work when you're opening up the roads, Is this going to be addressed as well?
Great question, Nick. You've got any input on that?
Short answer, again, is that we do try to run fiber optic cabling whenever we are doing a road construction project and the cabling can be accommodated within the limits of that project. The trickier answer is whether that network cabling can be made available for any sort of public consumption of wireless connectivity or internet connectivity. That historically, that network has been established for connectivity to only the traffic signal system. There has been conversations about how it was installed and whether we can take advantage of some of the additional capacity on that fiber optic network for other purposes, but I don't know that those conversations have resolved themselves at this time. We can certainly look into it, but I don't have a clear answer for you right now.
Okay, I'd appreciate if you could look into it. I think it's, I mean, the opportunity is presenting itself, and we certainly see the need in the community.
Thank you. I believe Commissioner Weinroth, you're next up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very happy to see the Project 14-3, Atlantic Avenue from State Road 7 to East Lyons Road. Every time we have a project that comes before the Board of County Commissioners, we get significant pushback from the community with respect to that road and how it's overburdened and how we need to give it a rest, but it's certainly great to see that we've got the right-of-way being acquired, and also hard to see the work being programmed for west of Lyons to State Road 7. So those are two projects that I'm very happy to see are in this State Road modifications. I also wanted just to make a shout-out for Palmtran and thank them for the foresight to be getting four new electric buses. Since I've been on the Palmtran Service Board prior to my service on the commission, I've been working hard with the executive director to get them to move in that direction. And I think putting the electric charge electric charging stations at the maintenance facility is a step forward. I'm still working on our county administrator to do likewise with our county facilities, and I've been promised that we might even see electric charge stations before November. We'll see if that occurs. One question, Nick. I know, again, from my service on Palmtran Service Board that Palmtran has a contract for installation of transit shelters. And that has been a problem. I've always felt that the choice riders need to have a place where they can shelter, otherwise they're not going to be using the public transportation. How is this being coordinated with the efforts of Palmtran to put additional transit shelters out in the county?
Very deliberately. You're right. Palmtran has a contract with Outfront Media that binds their ability to install new shelters. It constrains their ability to be responsive to the needs of the transit riders. We are continuing to try to allocate funding to assist the transit provider with enhanced shelters so that the customer experience is better. But Palmtran has some work to do, and we're doing everything we can to help them, but they have some work to do to get out from under the constraints of that contract and be free to install shelters where funding is provided and ridership dictates that that investment is worthwhile.
And again, if the executive director of Palmtran is listening, this has been an issue that has been going on for several years, and we need to get out from under that contract. Apparently, the provider, the vendor, has an ability to veto any location that Palmtran would like to put up a shelter if they don't feel that they want to put it up, which is just an amazing contingency in that contract. And we do need to get out from under that contract. One final comment, Madam Chair. And I'm sure we also have former Commissioner Abrams watching. He always is keeping an eye on us and wanted to point out we're buying him a new train car. So thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. And also, I maybe encourage some of the municipalities to do what we did in the gardens, which was we took art, some of our Art in Public Places dollars and constructed stations. I'm sorry, passenger stops. And they're just these pretty green stations. So maybe encourage other municipalities to use their Art in Public Places dollars for that. Okay. I believe Christina Lambert, you have your hand up. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the TPA staff for this presentation. There are a number of great projects on here that I'd love to support, but I can't with the inclusion of the State Road 7 items on here. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move removal of the State Road 7 projects, but I don't know if I should do that now during this discussion, but I would like that noted before we vote on this package.
So noted. Paul, do you have any comment?
No, ma'am.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I still have five people with comments.
Yep, I've got Mayor Grant, are you next up?
Hello, this is Mayor Grant. Everyone can hear me?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
you're
sir.
Nodding your head. Thank you. One of the comments that I wanted to make is to follow up with what Greg, Commissioner Weiss was saying. When we're dealing with these roads, to do more with what we can with a fiber optic backbone throughout the county. I mean, originally our name was the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And we changed it to the Transportation Planning Agency, but with COVID-19, we realized that in order to conduct business, you don't necessarily need to leave your home. However, if you do not have high-speed internet access, it makes things much more difficult. And our current system, I think in the county, I know that specifically in Boynton Beach, we would love to have government assistance with fiber optics to build that backbone network. And so my question is, you know, to the board and to Nick, is that something that we can look to spend money on in the upcoming years?
Nick.
Madam Chair, in response to the mayor's question, I'm going to need to investigate that as to whether it's an eligible expenditure of transportation funds to install fiber optic cabling solely for the purpose of providing internet access to members of the public or to various entities along those corridors. I think what's happened in the past is we have been enabled to use federal dollars to install the fiber optic cabling network for transportation purposes. And then one of the constraints on that installation is that it was funded with federal transportation dollars, and repurposing portions of the capacity created by that network for other purposes has been it has not been a clean yes. I think we've been still continuing to investigate that. But the question, can we use federal money to install fiber optic network solely for the purpose of providing internet service without any transportation value? I'm guessing the answer is going to be no on that, but we can continue to pursue the question of if we are installing transportation related network, can we repurpose some of the capacity that is installed for other purposes? I would be happy to report back to the board after we do a little research.
Thank you.
Nick, if you'd allow me just to jump on that for a second. The situation with the schools right now has certainly highlighted the need for enhancing the broadband within the county, and the county is working with the school district, and we are aware of the FDOT capacity that is probably available, and we're trying to determine how we can exploit some of that capacity so that we can improve the broadband access for our students. Since last night the school board made the decision that they're going to have virtual schools, at least for the near term. So broadband is certainly something that, as the mayor says, is very important to businesses, for people who are working from home or sites outside of their normal workplace, and certainly for our school districts, it's essential that we not have a disparity in the ability for students to have an education based upon where they live. And so this is going to be a priority for the county, and I would welcome the assistance of the TPA, FDOT, and along with the school district in trying to work towards this goal.
Thank you.
I'm just curious as to whether people have been looking into Florida Rambler Rail. I don't know if anybody is.
I can hear you, Hal.
Sorry. I was in a letter talking about high-speed internet. You know, Florida has a very robust core backbone called Florida Rambler Rail, and I don't know what the status is of people connecting to that. It obviously runs along rail corridors, as the name implies, but you know, there is tons and tons of fiber capacity on that, and I know they've been trying to hook the municipality. I don't know if they've been trying to hook the municipalities, have, you know, businesses, etc., have been looking into that for years, and I don't know, if, Steve, if you've pursued that at any point.
Any more comments on fiber optics?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. I have, and these are the orders I have, so that's how I'm going to call you, McKinley, Triolo, Koretsky, and then Valachie. So, Melissa, would you go next, please?
Yes. Thank you. First, I want to thank Nick and the TPA team for including the street lighting on State Road 80. Nick, it's a shame that we're not doing a performance review today because I'm very excited when I see this list of projects. Number two, I really wish we could stop voting on State Road 7 at every damn meeting that we have. It's getting old. We need to figure out a remedy to this constant back and forth battle. But the last thing I want to discuss is connecting to Wi-Fi. I mean, this was an idea that I brought up at our county commission meeting on Tuesday. It's something that legislatively I worked with Todd von Laren on when I was his aide. And I reached out to Congresswoman Lois Frankel on Tuesday, since she sits on infrastructure committees in Congress. Her staff is looking into that for us. I've also reached out to the National Association of Counties to see if they've got any best practices anywhere else in the state. So we are looking into that, and Nick, I will make sure that you and your team stay abreast on those conversations. Thanks.
Thank you. Mayor Triolo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I love your bus shelters.
Thank you.
Every time I come through, I'm like, I want those. So good idea. I come here with so much excitement because I think in the 8 years since I've been here, I've never seen so many projects happening in Lake Worth Beach. I am thankful. I am grateful. And I'm so excited because we have so much new development that's going on throughout our community. You'll see 300 to 400 new units on Dixie Highway coming in, new projects, and all the resurfacing of Lake and Lucerne and the sidewalks in our downtown. And the one area, if I might just express a little disappointment, and please forgive me for that. First of all, Nick and everyone at TPA, thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to thank my staff for working literally day, night, and overnight to get things shovel ready and get new projects to be submitted in all of the areas that we're discussing in this item. The only one that's a bit disappointing, and possibly, Nick, you might be able to help, is under local initiatives. It's page 53, item 20-3. And a lot of people may not be familiar with Southeast Coast and H Street. It's right just west of City Hall. It's in our West Village area that it's being called now. It's an area of tremendous investment by our local CRA in an arts district. and we have those artist work lofts and whatnot, but the area in question is actually our TOD. And if you'll see on the local initiatives item, it shows $5 million being given to the city of Lake Worth Beach to basically work. That whole area has just been invested in by a group that's putting a project called the Bohemian in place and will also include our future area for a train stop in that location. We've been granted the $5 million, but actually going through the process with EPDOT and the organizations involved, they've actually only pledged a little over $3 million to do that, and including surfacing projects and not actual constructions below the pavement. And it's disappointing because, you know, sometimes we apply for these local initiatives. It's nice to have projects that we can't include in our budgets, but this is more of a need to have project in that this is our TOD. This is, you know, our community is one of the strongest communities that uses local transportation, whether it's buses, whether it's tri-rail. And I would ask to see if maybe staff, Nick, you could help us work with them to try to get more of this project included. It's so very important to the revitalization. The Bohemian project is actually going to bring about 300 to 400 new units, which is 800 new people, switching these roads to one-ways and being able to maneuver around the downtown. And as you know, west of Dixie Highway is an area for great growth in our community. So I reach out to you, Nick, and to my fellow members and to FDOT to please work with us. This is an important area for the city, and we really need it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Pam. Okay, next on my list is...
Madam Chair, if I could take a moment just to respond, because I think, again, the answer is beneficial to all of our board members and their staff. So we love the project. First, it was a great application. It was actually submitted to us last year as a slightly different outcome and was not eligible for funding last year. It's been the Coast Street project in Lake Worth Beach has been refined to comply with federal aid eligibility rules. Here's the key. The federal aid money that we have, what they call the Surface Transportation Program money, can only be spent on the federal aid eligible network, which means you have to be a collector road or bigger in order to receive federal aid money, unless you are primarily a pedestrian and bicycle facility project. The revisions to Coast Street actually made that project function as a pedestrian and bicycle primary project, but there are restoration elements in the project, kind of maintenance components in the project, that because it's not on the federal aid system, those components are not able to be funded with the funding the TPA has available to put on its priority projects. We've actually done a lot more by allowing it to be in the local initiatives program as a pedestrian bike project. We've eliminated the threshold of the cap of $1 million and been able to allocate $3 million to it. But the maintenance components, the restoration components of the project are not able to be funded with TPA money because it's not on the federal aid eligible network. It's not a big enough road. So I want our local elected officials and our local partners to be aware of that. The dollars that we have, the 22, I think Andrew said, 22.8 million a year that we have available in federal aid for not state roads, still have criteria associated with them. We want to use those as well as we can. We want to give as much money to our local partners to enhance your communities as we're able to, but we're ultimately subject to those federal regulations.
Any follow-up, Pam?
Yes, thank you. I'm so grateful, Nick. Really, I am. I don't mean to sound like sour grapes, but it's just being a TOD, is there anything else that we can do for that, since that is a crucial intersection for what we're talking about, all alternative forms of transportation? Because that's a big, heavy load. If you're looking at 3.2, I think their number was 3.292586, and we were expecting 5. That leaves us with 3.5 million in infrastructure improvements to that project. That's a heavy load right now, especially in the middle of a pandemic, but we want to get that done because that project is moving ahead in that area, and there's going to be a lot of traffic there. We're going to need all the help we can get. Is there any other way around, is there other alternative forms of funding for that, Nick? Or you know what? I won't waste any verbal time. Nick, you and I will talk another time. Is that okay?
We're happy to work with you more offline. I think there may be creative options we can explore, and we're willing to have additional conversations.
I would love that. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. Mr. Kretzky, I have you next.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The this project that leads to the town of Jupiter is a priority state load modification project. It is on the project scheduling report that we'll get to on agenda item 4A, and there may be a logical reason why this can't be on the priority list, and if so, I'd like to know why. But you know, Indian Town Road, at least a year or two back, was the most overcapacity six-lane road in the county. And I know I've been working on that for many years. So there's a there's a interchange modification, a northbound off-ramp is being changed that we somewhat commandeered to incorporate state road modifications through to Central Boulevard, and the town is funding that. And that was scoped out about 3 years ago, and, you know, sometime it'll eventually get done. But I just would love to see it as a priority because it is funded. But there may be a logic because it's an interstate, but then it is a state road. So we expanded the scope to include the state road mods. And it just hurts me that we're not recognizing that as a priority strategic, you know, state road modification. So I just asked Nick, would that be eligible, or why not? And could we, by some other means, emphasize its importance so it doesn't kind of get lost in the, because I'm not asking for funding here. The town is funding, effectively funding the state road modification for the most part, because nobody else would step up. It is important to us. But we just feel better if it was made a priority. Nick, I don't know if you have any comments about that.
The short answer is this is a priority list. This is a priority list that directs funding.
I understand.
And so if you're not asking for funding, then you really don't need to be on the list. That being said, the kind of work that the town has committed to doing on Indian Town Road, to paying for that the DOT will be constructing, is exactly why we created the State Road Modifications Program. So that local government could say through the TPA, to the department, this outcome matters to our community. Let's use state resources to better construct state roadways so that we don't have to allocate our local dollars to modify the state roads. That's the whole purpose of the program, to give you the ability together collectively to decide which state roads warrant modification and then to get those modifications funded without having to allocate some of your local resources to those outcomes.
And, well, I appreciate that, and I expect that was the answer. Kind of the shame of it is that's so important to us that we're even stepping up to fund it, but then it doesn't get classified as a priority project, right? It just doesn't seem right, but thank you for the explanation.
Mayor Pinto, Vice Mayor Marino was kicked off of the Zoom meeting and she's trying to reconnect. She asked that you take over. I have comments from Hal Valachet and Robert Weinroth.
Okay, continue.
Actually, I did have a question for Chair Marino, but maybe Andrew can answer it. The Kiara Gardens Drive, that's on the local initiatives for the local application process, that runs exactly by Florida Power and Light's new project. And I was just wondering if the city is collaborating with Florida Power and Light, because it's $1 million allocation that I know they're going to be doing significant modifications to that road, making entrance ways, et cetera. So is there a collaboration going on between the city and FBM?
I'll have to follow up with our staff on that and look through that. Maybe Nick has answered that already, but yeah, we're getting real-time updates. So Natalie Crowley is the director of planning for the city. She just texted me and said, yes, we have the FPL support for the project that we've asked for, and we'll be coordinating the improvements of that corridor with anything that they're going to be doing on their property. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we had someone else who had.
And Vice Mayor Barbara.
Yeah. Thank you. Just a point of order. Just Paul. Commissioner Lambert has raised the issue of wanting to amend this motion to adopt. Would it be in order for her to make that motion, or would it be in order to make the motion to adopt and have her attempt to make a motion to substitute her motion?
I think the easiest thing is the way we've handled this in the past, and that is simply to make a motion to amend the document by striking the projects that she wishes to delete. Then the body can vote on that. Then after voting on that amendment, then you would take up a motion to adopt the document.
Okay, so you're going to amend the motion that hasn't been made yet. I mean, you're going to amend the resolution even though it hasn't been made yet.
Well, I'm assuming there'll be a motion to adopt the resolution.
All right. Are there any more comments, or can I make the motion to adopt?
I have no more hands raised.
All right, then I'll make a motion to adopt a resolution approving the fiscal year 22-26 list of priority projects.
Second.
Jim Marino, are you back?
I believe she's trying to connect to her audio.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table. We have a motion and a second. We have to do this by roll call.
I do have Commissioner Lambert has her hand raised as well.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
I have Commissioner Lambert with her hand raised.
Oh, you're recognized.
Thank you. So if I am to understand, I can make the motion to amend now, or I need to wait until after the vote. Okay. So I'd like to make a motion to amend the list of priority projects to remove the State Road 7 project from 60th Street to North Lake Boulevard and State Road 7 project from Okeechobee Boulevard to 60th Street.
Second.
Mayor Marino, are you back?
I am.
Okay. There's a motion.
Why don't you go ahead and close out the motion?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead and close out the motion.
All right, we close out the we have a motion and a second for as stated, and I'm going to turn the gavel back over to you, Chair.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Since I missed the motion itself, Paul, could you reread the motion?
We have an amendment before.
Yes, ma'am. Where we're at is a motion was made, I believe, by Commissioner Weinroth to go ahead and adopt the list of priority projects. And then Commissioner Lambert made a motion to amend to strike the State Road 7 projects. So what you would be voting on at this point would be...
Is the amendment.
The amendment, whether or not to strike those projects. A yes vote would be to amend and to strike those projects.
And this would be a roll call vote?
Yes.
However you wish to proceed.
Paul, I'm sorry. For the records, that way it's clear for the record, we will do this as a roll call vote.
Okay. So just as a reminder, if you vote yes, you are taking State Road 7 off. And if you vote no, you are keeping it on, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Go, Margie, why don't you go ahead and call the roll?
Okay, Madam Chair. And just to clarify, the two projects, Commissioner Lambert, was State Road 7 from 60th Street to North Lake Boulevard and State Road 7 from Okeechobee Boulevard to 60th Street. Okay, you're nodding. I just want to confirm. Okay, Joseph Anderson. Mary Lou Berger. I can't hear you, Commissioner Berger.
Can you move me towards the bottom, please?
Yes, ma'am. Joni Brinkman.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Doug Gunther?
No.
Joelle Flores?
No.
Stephen Grant?
No.
Jim Koretsky?
No.
Shirley Lanier? Maria Marino?
No.
Melissa McKinley?
No.
Michael Napoleone?
No.
Corey Nearing?
Yes.
Christina Lambert?
Yes.
Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
No.
Scott Singer?
No.
Andy Thompson?
No.
Pam Triola?
No.
Hal Balashay?
No.
Robert Weinroth?
No.
Greg Weitz?
Yes.
Steve Wilson?
No.
Mary Zeberger?
No.
Is that all the votes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so the motion failed. I'm sorry, Margie, why don't you go ahead?
It failed 15-4.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, now we go back to the original motion, which is to approve action item A, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Do we need a roll call for this, or can we just say yay or nay?
We need a roll call, Madam Chair.
All righty.
I'm going to go the opposite way this time.
Okay.
Steve Wilson? Steve Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you. Greg Weitz? I'm sorry.
No.
Thank you. Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Hal Balashay?
Yes.
Pam Triola?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Scott Singer?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Christina Lambert?
No.
Roy Nearing?
No.
Michael Napoleone?
Yes.
Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Maria Marino?
Yes.
Shirley Lanier? Jim Kresge?
Yes.
Stephen Graham?
Yes.
Joel Flores?
Yes.
Doug Gunther?
Yes.
Mary Zeberger?
Yes.
Joseph Anderson? Or Catherine Walton, I apologize. It passes, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to comment and say that, you know, it's been a really tough time with development and transportation and everything. And I'd like to give a shout out to all of our, those in the construction industry that were essential services. They really did essential services during COVID, you know, laying sidewalk and roadways and lighting and paving. And I think they don't get the recognition they deserve. So this is just a small shout out to them and to the TPA for recognizing how important transportation is during COVID. So we will move to our next item on the agenda, which is, I'm sorry. We have one public comment for an item not on the agenda. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you please invite whomever that might be up to have his or her 3 minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have Keith Krieger.
And can you state your name and address for the record, please?
Good morning, all. My name is Keith Krieger from 23 Princewood Lane, Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. I'm here today. I hear a lot of talk about the FDOT work program, and I'm an engineer. Professional engineer since the 1980s, and I'm all for professional engineering projects, professional engineering design, and DOT projects here in Palm Beach County, all for Palm Beach County itself. I worked my entire career from West Palm Beach as a highway engineering consultant to the FDOT, primarily with District 4 and Fort Lauderdale. I have some issues with the way DOT goes about procuring FDOT engineering services, and the effect that it's having on the engineering companies here in Palm Beach County. There's a lack of work here in Palm Beach County as far as engineering design. The FDOT preference for engineering companies from Miami-Dade County is also adding to that discrimination against engineering companies here in Palm Beach County. I've done a lot of research, and I've confirmed the data. I've provided it to the county commission and also to Nick and spoken with Nick about it. I believe that Nick agreed with my concerns generally and offered that at some point in the past he had previously suggested to the transportation planning agency that the DOT District 4 headquarters be relocated from Broward County to somewhere here in Palm Beach County. I've discussed the issue with District 4 Secretary Jerry O'Reilly as far back as 2016 and with FDOT Inspector General. The FDOT itself does not intend to make any changes with the way they're procuring projects, and that's leaving the firms in Palm Beach County kind of shorted. I suggested to the TPA that making a request to the DOT for an explanation of the information I provided with my online comment last night, I provided the latest spreadsheet that shows a lack of engineering work here in Palm Beach County from the DOT. And so I'm here today to make my request an official part of today's meeting, an official part of the meeting. And I'm also here if anybody has any questions. I can try to answer any questions. I again thank you all for your service to Palm Beach County. I'm a resident of over 50 years. And I'm Keith Krieger from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Any questions?
Thank
you. Ready to go.
Thank you very much. Okay, so now let's go on to item B, motion to approve the TPA's fiscal year 21 strategic plan. And I invite Valerie Neal. Valerie, I haven't seen you. So, Alyssa, are you doing the presentation?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone. Hi, Valerie.
So I'll be presenting a few highlights from fiscal year 20. We follow the state fiscal year, which runs from July 1st through June 30th. So we just finished fiscal year 20 and began fiscal year 21 on July 1st. Fiscal year 20 was a big year for us. Here's a picture not too long ago of some of our board members in our boardroom doing a ribbon cutting. A few of the highlights from this past year include that we became an independent agency, we moved to a new office building downtown, we adopted our five-year update to our long-range transportation plan for 2045, we created an online comment map, and we hosted a transit peer exchange and a Vision Zero workshop, which we were really excited because after that, we got one new Vision Zero city. Congratulations, City of Boynton Beach. We have put together an annual report to highlight some of the activities and things that happened in fiscal year 20, and that's available on our website, but it focuses on our six goals that advance our mission and vision. And I'm just going to go through that quickly to get to fiscal year 21 strategic plan. But this is what it looks like. It has some pictures and some highlights. You can, on the left, you see a picture of our February board meeting where we had a lot of public participation, over 2,000 public comments in a full boardroom, and then various other pictures throughout the year, also our comment map on the left to receive more public comments. We also highlight some of the projects that began or were constructed over this past year with TPA funds, and just highlight in general, some of the events that happened over this past year, as well as our strategic plan report card. So for our fiscal year 21 draft strategic plan, this is a one-year document focused on specific actions that we want to advance to achieve our vision and goals above and beyond our two-year unified planning work program. This is not a required document by federal or state regulations, but it's been a best practice by the TPA since 2016. On June 22nd, our board subcommittee met to review our fiscal year 2020 strategic plan, our progress, and recommend updates to the fiscal year 21 strategic plan. And that's what I'm going to present now. So under our first goal, engage the public, I'll be highlighting in red the items that are changing. Things that are being deleted are strike through and new things are underlined. So under item 1A, our goal last year was to create a pilot interactive comment map. Well, we created that, so now we revised that to say we want to promote our interactive comment map, and our outcome is that we want to achieve 500 comments by next June. Under goal 1, action C, we expanded it to say conduct or support outreach events and campaigns. So those are the changes under Engage the Public. For Plan the System under Goal 2A, we had an outcome of conducting 3 multimodal corridor studies, specifically on our enhanced transit plan corridors, but we bumped that down to 2 because we realized that these are big efforts and 3 might be a bit much to achieve in 1 year, so we're striving for 2 by next June. For 2B, we revised the language a little bit to be more all-encompassing. We had conduct safe routes to school and walking audits, walking safety audits. We revised that to continue to do that, but to say conduct pedestrian and bicycle safety field reviews. So we want to conduct those field reviews and identify bicycle and pedestrian safety improvements around schools, but also around other areas as well. And under this goal, we also added a new action to include for this year. We try to have around 3 to 5 actions per goal. We want to create a complete streets opportunities plan. And our goal for this is to do a kind of a big sweep across our county, our federally aid eligible roads, and looking at DOT, city, and county roads to identify potential complete streets improvements that could be made and then share that with the roadway owners to see if they would like to implement those improvements. So that's something that we want to put together over the next year. Under Goal 3, Prioritize Funding, we revised the language under D to say we had said create a priority list of safety projects, but we realized our priority list is very focused on safety, so we want to identify which projects are having safety improvements within our priority list. For Goal 4, under Action A, and this was a recommendation from our board subcommittee, we had to review upcoming FDOT county and city projects, such as resurfacing projects, review their designs to ensure they're advancing our priorities to create a safe, efficient, and connected system. We revised this language to say engage stakeholders, do more engagement with the stakeholders as we're reviewing these projects and engaging with the local municipalities to promote our vision and priorities and consider their local preferences as well. So more engagement with our stakeholders as we review and provide recommendations. For Goal 5, we have several changes here. So Action A, we had previously researched existing mobility plans and fees throughout the state of Florida. We did that, but we're kind of putting that aside and creating a new action for this year. And we have received a lot of requests and questions regarding do we have bicycle and pedestrian activity data from our local municipalities. So we want to collaborate with our municipalities and the county and work with the county with their existing technology to try to count bicycle and pedestrian. We're shooting for 12 locations that have continuous counts. So that's something we want to try out and strive for this year. Under B, we had previously facilitate local walk, bike. Can you guys hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Now we can.
It said I was muted by the host, so I wasn't sure. Okay, so under 5B, we had facilitate local walk, bike, and age-friendly designations, which we want to continue to do, but we're not really in control of that. We can't force a city or the county to get these designations. So we want to continue facilitating, but instead of setting us up for a goal we might not be able to achieve, instead we said assist our local governments with transportation studies and plans. So we want to assist at least 3 local governments with as being a funding partner for example, complete street studies, mobility plans, and things like that. For Action D and E are new actions under this goal. So we want to create a complete streets project video by next June, focusing on Palm Beach County and other highlights of projects in South Florida that we can highlight, because we know that there's a lot of complete streets projects going on around the country, around the state, but we really want to highlight some of the things that are happening in our own backyard, and hopefully that will serve as an example for our local municipalities, for projects that we're trying to achieve but we're really not sure of, finding some of these similar projects that have already occurred recently or here in our area. So that's something that we want to do by next June. And then E, a new action that came up from our subcommittee was to facilitate a discussion of our long-range transportation plan projects and their inclusion in local comprehensive plans. So we want to engage a little further with our local municipalities and their comprehensive plans to align our LRTP projects with their plans and provide a summary report of that by next June. And then finally, the last goal, administer the agency goal 6, we, on action C, we had moved to a new office and meeting space, and we achieved that. So a new action that we want to pursue is to pursue a designated, a workplace designation. So this could be a best places to work. It could be a bicycle friendly business. We want to explore some various designations and achieve at least one by next June. So those are the revisions and the proposed changes for our fiscal year 21 strategic plan.
Anyone have any questions on any of the components presented in the plan? I'm not hearing any audio. We're not hearing the chair audio.
I'm right here. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. Okay.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. Do we have any public comments on this?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you please read them into the record?
It is actually in the Zoom platform that we have a public comment.
And okay.
I'm not sure how to say the first name, but the last name is Nugent. I will allow them to speak. You will need to unmute on your end. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Oh, are you there? They unmuted and then they muted themselves again.
Okay.
I think the last name is Nguyen.
Madam Chair, they lowered their hand as well, so I'm not sure if they're still planning to make a public comment, but I've tried unmuting them so that they could speak. But they have to control it on their end as well.
All right, so then I will go to, I need a motion to adopt a resolution approving the fiscal year 21 strategic plan, and then I will open the floor to discussion.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so I had a motion from
second from Flores.
Thank you very much. Okay. I have Commissioner Weiss, your hand is up, and Commissioner Weinroth, yours is also. So I'll start with Commissioner Weiss.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So my one of the things I think, you know, is an opportunity to include in here is to really look at the impact of transportation from the pandemic and what it's done and what the future impacts are going to be. You know, maybe part of transportation is actually not transportation, where people are staying home for work, for school, and, you know, and that impact. And also the impact, what do we think long-term as it relates to transit and the various kinds of transit? You know, are you really going to fill a bus up with people again? Are you going to, you know, how's the on-demand services and the impact to them on the roadway and on our network? And then also, you know, maybe does this accelerate autonomous vehicle opportunities? I think this is just an opportunity, you know, because of the changing environment we're living in, to look at something new and different. And I don't know if there's a way to ask that be amended into the plan for next year.
I guess my question would be, Nick, what component of the plan would such that endeavor fall under? It sounds to me like where we included the enhanced requirement for engagement with our partners and stakeholders, would that fall somewhere in there as a subcomponent within the plan?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it matters where we stick it, but I hear the point that we should be doing some sort of an assessment of commuting patterns during the pandemic and post-pandemic. The post-pandemic is going to be, it's going to be challenging to predict, but we can do as much data collection as possible and then try to assemble some, Mayor Pinto is fond of the term, subject matter experts to give us guidance on what our predictions ought to be based upon as we look at the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Greg, is that okay with you?
Yep. Thank
okay.
you. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Weinroth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given the trajectory of the pandemic, I'm going to assume that EO 2059 will be extended and even the September meeting will probably be virtual. However, notwithstanding that, I think when we talk about goal one, engaging the public, I think we should take a lesson learned from what we've been doing today and in previous virtual meetings and be able to provide a video link to the TPA board meetings to the community to facilitate their engagement on an ongoing basis. So I would think that we could add an item E to goal one to, again, provide that ongoing link to our community of TPA board meetings and allow the community to be able to, again, have the opportunity to opine during that portion of our agenda.
Thank you. I think the next hand up is Council Member Koretsky.
Just on the same goal under engaging the public, I think the, and I appreciate, by the way, the effort of all on putting this together, the metric on promoting interactive comment map and 500 comments by June, I do believe it should be qualified, and I just propose, like, counting no more than 50 comments on a single topic. Truly engage early this year, you have a single topic, you could get to 500, but that wouldn't be meaningful. I mean, it is meaningful on that single topic, but this has to be multi-topic. So again, my suggestion is to qualify that in getting 50 comments, which probably should be very easy, the more active social media becomes, that we count no more than 50 comments on a single topic. So meaning we're getting meaningful comments on a lot of topics.
Nick?
Makes sense to me.
Perfect. Do I have any other hands raised? I can't see if we do or not.
No, Madam Chair.
All right. So since we have no more further discussion, may I please have a...
Madam Chair, just for clarification, we had a motion and a second to approve as presented, and then in discussion, there were two suggested additional actions and one clarification. Are you asking for the board to vote on a motion including those suggested additions and modification or as presented?
Do we need a motion to amend the, do we need a motion to amend in order to do that?
No, you can take a motion to adopt with the additional items included if you wish.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you very much. May I have a motion to adopt with the additional items included?
So moved. Weinroth.
All those in favor? This is not a roll call vote, right?
It's a roll call vote, Madam Chair.
Okay. Then would you please call the roll?
Mary Lou Berger. While she's getting connected, Douglas Gunther.
Yes.
Jamal Flores.
Yes.
Stephen Grant.
Yes.
Jim Koretsky.
Yes.
Yes.
Shirley Lanier. Maria Moreno.
Yes.
Melissa McKinley.
Yes.
Michael Napoleon.
Yes.
Corey Nearing.
Yes.
Christina Lambert.
Yes.
Shelley Petrolia. I'm not sure if we lost her on the call. Fred Pinto?
She's muted, that's why.
I apologize, Mayor. I didn't catch that.
Yes. Shelley Petrolia, yes.
Thank you. Mayor Pinto?
Yes.
Scott Singer?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Pam Shirola?
Yes.
Hal Valachay?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
Yes.
Steve Wilson? Steve Wilson, I'm showing that you're unmuted on my end. I'm not sure if your phone's muted, Mayor. And then Mary DeBurger?
Yes.
Steve Wilson? Madam Chair, I'm showing he's on the call, but I can't get a verbal vote for him, so I will mark him as absent from this vote. It passes unanimously.
Thank you very much. All righty, we are now on to information items, and I believe we have some comment cards, but we'll have our presentation first. So, Alexander Estrada, are you here?
Yes.
Thank you. Would you go ahead and give the presentation?
Good morning, everybody. So, what we put here together is a kind of a short presentation on the recently started PD&E study, project development and environmental study on Atlantic Avenue. So this study is encompassing from Turnpike to Jug Road, the full study. However, just to clarify, there is a project for design that is programmed that is going to go from Lyons to Jug Road. However, this particular study is focusing on Turnpike to Jug Road section, as we have some, more of an impact in that area. So we would like to go through a study and identify all the impacts and, come up with the best alternative concept for this section. As you know, there's been a lot of congestion in this area. So our goal is to provide additional capacity as well as other pedestrian and bicycle improvements in this quarter. With me, I have Rudy from Scalar Consulting Group, who's going to go through more of a detailed overview of the project. And then we're going to take any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Good morning. I'm Rudy Goodmurray, Scalar Consulting Group. I'm the design PD&E consultant project manager. Our presentation outline today is...
I'm sorry, but we can't hear you very well. Can you speak louder?
Can you hear me now?
There's a lot of background noise that's also drumming him out.
Yes.
Okay. How about now? Can you hear me?
Yes. That's an improvement.
That's better. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. I just turned the fan on, off actually. Let me start again. I'm Rudy Goodmurray. What we want to do today is the PD&E study that we are conducting. Just give a project introduction, talk about purpose and need for the project, some of the corridor characteristics, and then discuss the project schedule. Why are we here? We want to inform everyone that the project has begun. We had a presentation with CAC, TAC, and the bike committee, and we're going to have that discussions here today. We're going to provide the information and get input. We already got some input from the CAC, TACs, and we want to continue to move forward with getting input on this project. Just a general PD&E study is about engineering analysis. We're going to look at alternatives, then look at environmental impacts of the proposed improvements. And last but not the least, and the most important part, is public involvement. From the day we started the project, we are going to engage all the stakeholders, agencies, to move forward and get their input as we develop alternatives and ultimately present all those alternatives in a public workshop that is currently scheduled in spring of 2021 and conduct a public hearing in December of 2021. What you see here today is general timeline from the planning study up to construction. We are currently in a PD&E phase, which is approximately 2 years. Then we move to design, which is again going to be 2 to 3 years. Since this project has a right-of-way acquisition, so the design schedule will be a little bit longer, and then the construction ranges from 2 to 4 years. What you see here is a project location map. You know, it's Atlantic Avenue. As Alex indicated, we are starting the project at the Jog Road, at the Turnpike on the west end, and terminating project at the Jog Road on the east end of the project. The Jog Road intersection will be part of this study. The approximate length is 1.8 miles, and most of the corridor under this study is within the unincorporated areas of Palm Beach County. So the purpose is we are going to address capacity needs. In addition to capacity needs for existing and future travel demand, we are also going to look at safety for the vehicles, as well as pedestrians and bicyclists along the corridor. We know this project has been identified in Palm Beach TPA's 2045 LRTP. Our goal is to enhance safety and mobility, as we know there are current existing gaps for sidewalks, and also introduce continuous bicycle lanes and the sidewalks throughout the project. Here is a summary map. As you can see, the color in red is the future traffic, and in blue is existing condition. As you can see, even for the current traffic, some of the segments along the corridor are operating at level of service F, which is not acceptable. And for the future traffic, we definitely need to look at some capacity improvements. Another important aspect of this corridor is it's a heavy truck volumes. The daily truck volumes are almost more than 12%. So the proposed improvements that are identified, we're going to look at the capacities, try to add 2 extra lanes, one in each direction, enhance safety along the corridor, and also make this corridor a multimodal by providing continuous bike lanes and as well as sidewalks on both sides of the roads. Some of the considerations that we will have to evaluate is right-of-way. Right-of-way is constrained along the corridor, so we will have to look at widening the project a little bit, may have some canal impact on Lakewood Drainage District. There are several utilities on the corridor, and then noise will be also be evaluated as a part of this project. The next slide. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
What's your slide?
Okay. It's somehow the screen is frozen. So next
slide. I do see timeline and funding. Can you see that screen?
No, on my end it's frozen. So let's talk about timeline and funding. From the timeline point of view, we currently this project, we started it around February. We are anticipating a public workshop, which is alternative workshop in spring of 2020, and then conduct a public hearing. Currently the design and the PD&E are currently funded, as well as right of way. The construction is not currently funded. It's on the work program for as a candidate list item. Next slide, please.
The next slide says contacts.
Contacts. Okay. From the contacts point of view, Alex is our project manager, and you can also contact FDOT, Public Information Officer. With that, there's a one slide about public involvement I would like to talk about. From the coordination point of view, there was a newsletter that was sent out to the residents along the corridor, as well as HOA, Homeowners Association, and also the it's also posted on our website for the project. So if someone wants to make some comments or contact us, they can go to our website and include their comments there, as well as send emails to Alex. With that, I thank you for your patience, and I open
there's it. Also there's also a slide that we missed. If you go another one back, the typical section, the yeah, the concept alternative.
Yeah.
That
somehow my computer is
I think
closed.
It got skipped. So
okay, can we go back to the typical section slide, please?
Yeah, we're there. You can
yeah,
go on.
Slide is appearing, yeah. Overview okay. of concept alternative.
Okay. From the typical section point, typical section alternatives, what we are looking at is a 6-lane divided typical with 11-foot lanes. We have a 22-foot median. We have buffered bike lanes, which are 7-foot, and we are proposing 6-foot sidewalks on both sides of the roadway. From this typical, we're going to evaluate two alternatives. One alternative would be the southern alternative, which is widening on the south side, which is towards the canal. And the second alternative we're going to look at is what we call it a best fit. What that means is we're going to try to avoid impacts on, we make an attempt to avoid the impacts. And if we cannot avoid it, we want to minimize our impact. So we're going to try to fit this proposed typical within the right of way and try to minimize the impacts on the adjacent properties, both on the north as well as on the south side of the roadway. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Are there any more slides?
No, we can go to the end. Yeah.
Thank you. I do know that I have some, we do have some public comment on these, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you please read those into the record?
Yes, ma'am. So I received one from Michael Sands, Eagle Point Drive, Delray Beach. He submitted 7 questions, and they have been forwarded to the project team as well. The first one, I'm sorry, I'm just going to set the timer that way I don't read over the 3 minutes.
Thank you.
One, will there be a representative to talk to the HOAs directly affected with egress and ingress as to what will have to be moved, such as flagpole, security call box, gated community, vegetation, and entrance roundabout? Number two, we will need a sound barrier for those houses directly abutted on Atlantic Avenue. 3, will there be a representative to talk to the HOAs directly affected with egress and ingress as to what will have to be moved, such as flagpole, security call box, gated community, vegetation, and entrance roundabout? 4, we will need a sound barrier to those houses directly abutted on Atlantic Avenue. 5, what will happen with the canal on the south side of Atlantic, and will our lake continue to drain in the event of extended rains or hurricanes? 6, why didn't the other residents of Eagle Point receive FDOT newsletter in the mail? 7, the TPA slideshow bullet points stated the acceleration of widening of Atlantic Avenue from Lyons to Jog. The FDOT newsletter widening project is Turnpike to Jog. Which is it? The second one is from Lori Vinicor, Lorena Road in Delray Beach. She's representing the Alliance of Delray Residential Associations. Her comment is, it is most important that the expansion of Atlantic Avenue is expedited. Infill projects are accumulating, which will cause Atlantic Avenue, an inadequate link between intersecting roadways, to become even more treacherous for motorists and pedestrians. The Alliance looks forward to productive meetings with FDOT throughout the expansion process.
Thank you. Is that it?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Do we have any board members that have any comments or questions?
I have Vice Mayor Weinroth with his hand raised.
Okay. Commissioner Weinroth.
Madam Chair, certainly Dr. Vinicor is echoing the same comments that I made earlier, that this is certainly a project that the Board of County Commissioners would like to see expedited if at all possible. But I am a little fuzzy about the presentation today, and obviously we had some technical difficulties, but I'd like to go back over the overview of the concepts alternative because I think that's an important part of this presentation. And I'm interested to see if we were to go in that direction, what its impact would be on the timeline, how this affects the impacts on right-of-way acquisition, and what's the potential for cooperation with Lake Worth Drainage District as far as the encroachment on their easement.
Thank you. Are you able to answer those questions?
Alex?
Yes, we can. Would you want me to go one by one on the previous questions and then, or?
That would be fine, thank you.
So, there was a question about regarding the representative from, to talk to HOAs and egress points and flagpole security call boxes, vegetation, entrance.
I'm sorry. Would you please address Commissioner Weinwass's questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. So, regarding the Lake Worth Drainage District, we have been coordinating with Lake Worth on regarding their impacts. So there have been, at least at the staff level, there have been open to for us widening the road as long as we provide them with enough area for them to maintain the canal. So as long as we're able to meet their criteria of maintaining the canal, they were open, at least at the staff level. It hasn't gone to their board for approval, but at their staff level, they're open for us of widening as long as we meet their criteria for the canal, as well as potentially piping small sections of constrained areas where we're not able to provide that maintenance of the canal banks. So yeah, each concept that we're going to look at is we're going to try to minimize the impacts, both to residents and the canals side. So that is our goal, to kind of strike that balance between minimizing impact and providing a good alternative for this section.
The impacts on the timeline?
Currently, we're in the PD&E study, so I mean this is the perfect timing for where we're going to look at different types of alternatives. Once we select the preferred alternative, then they would go to design, which is scheduled for fiscal year 2022. So that's, in design, we're going to have finalized kind of our design and see what the right-of-way impacts and which parcels are affected. And then we'll go through the right-of-way phase. And that's kind of where, the long process continues on, of the project is gathering that right away that we need to accommodate the typical section for this project. So right now it's a perfect opportunity for us to look at different alternatives and see what are the impacts and continue on to selecting a appropriate alternative for this quarter. That's why we're here. We want to have any feedback. This typical is kind of a baseline, 11 foot lanes, 7 foot buffered bicycle lanes, and 22 standard foot median for his section. So this is kind of our baseline concept. We got to start somewhere. Obviously no build is also an alternative. And then we're going to look at several different alignments to minimize impacts to everybody.
Thank you. And as for the questions from the public, why don't you get with Nick and coordinate some answers for them?
Madam Chair, just for the record, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alex, but I do have Michael Sands with his hand raised. However, Michael, we will lower your hand because we read your comments into the record during that portion.
Thank you. It's a little tough. I do not see his hand anywhere. So thank you for that, for letting me know. Do we have any other members who would like to have, who have questions? Anyone want more further discussion, or can we move to the next item? Can you all hear me?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have no other
answers. Yes, we should move on, Madam Chair.
Okay, let's move on, and we're moving on to West Palm Beach Vision Zero. That would be information item B. May I invite Mr. Dang up, from the traffic engineer from the city of West Palm?
I would love to be Mr. Dang, but unfortunately, I'm actually Miss Dang.
I apologize. I didn't want to butcher your first name, so please say your name for us.
Absolutely. Good morning. I see a lot of people laughing. My name is Wen Dang. I'm the city traffic engineer for the city of West Palm Beach. And I'm here to talk a little bit about our Vision Zero plan and our policy that we've been working on for the past couple years here. So thank you so much for having me today. A quick introduction. We started in 2018, late 2018. And so I'll be reporting all the work that we've done in 2019, and then ultimately what our thoughts as we're moving out of COVID, and how do we transition into a post-COVID action plan. Next slide, please. West Palm Beach is a Vision Zero city. There are strategic steps for you to be on the Vision Zero network itself. Of course, we're in the state of Florida. We are along with Hillsborough County, Orlando, and Fort Lauderdale. I know Miami-Dade themselves is working on a plan to be part of Vision Zero family. But it's very unfortunate, and we'd like to see more cities, especially in the South Florida region, to be part of this network, because we are 14th of the most dangerous metropolitan in the country, Orlando being number one. And so we're on the top 20 list itself, and there's many other cities in South Florida that could benefit from this this strategy. Next slide, please. And so when we talk about Vision Zero, I think one of the things that we have to remember is that we have to change our narrative. We need to start referring to these crashes on our roadway network instead of calling them accidents. And really the number one reason is that crashes are preventable, right? So if we look at the data, and this is we've done some data analysis in the city of West Palm Beach itself, that more than half of the crashes in that results in fatality and severe injury, it really occurs on state and county roads, and not so much as the local roads. But however, these roads only make up about 23% of the entire network. And we've analyzed this data, omitting the crashes that we historically see on I-95. So this is actually very, very, it's discouraging, but at the same time, we know that there are steps to prevent it. Next slide. And then we look at the data, and here we talk about complete streets, and it's so encouraging to see that the Palm Beach TPA is very hyper-focused on complete streets, and so are we at the city of West Palm Beach, because we know that nearly 30% of the crashes that result in fatal and severe injury are really pedestrian and bicyclists, and 20% of that and later I'm going to show you data that comes from the healthcare district, and of course is our own police department data. Next slide. And when we look at those particular crashes, and we need to talk about equity, because the majority of those crashes are actually in low-income area. We see that the majority of our crashes that results in high fatality for pedestrian and bicyclists are actually along US 1. And so that's why there are a lot of strategy and a lot of approach for us to tackle in a very aggressive way. And when we talk about not so aggressive, but we need to prioritize prioritize space for more pedestrian bicyclists. So we're going to talk about some of those projects coming up. Next slide. And so really the concept of Vision Zero can be really comprised of engineering, education, and enforcement. You know, we believe that we have to design our streets differently. We have to design for a target street. If we're designing for 30 miles per hour, we know that the 85th percentile historically of our streets that's at 30 miles per hour have been 37, 38 miles per hour. So people tend to always drive a little bit faster than what is the posted speed. So what we want is we want to lower our target speed limits as we're approaching some of these design. The next aspect of it is educating the public. Not so much as, the giving out tickets. That's not the type of education that we want to focus on. We primarily focus on adolescent high schools and elementary school. One, we believe that elementary school students really connect with their parents as, I do have a young child myself. And then ultimately, we try to target the high school age group between 15 and 19 because that's the age group that is the highest among the crashes. Within our data. And we really like to promote equity and inclusion in especially our communications. One of the things that I think that we are very proud of is the way that we enforce. And our police department has actively working at our high visibility area under the grant that was advertised by the Palm Beach TPA just last year, that we are, instead of giving people tickets, we typically give them information. Instead of giving somebody a ticket for jaywalking, we let them know that here's a safer place to cross the street. We hand out bike lights. We give out helmets. And this is the type of education and enforcement that we work together in a systematic approach. Next slide. And so I'm very proud to say that, the collaboration with the Vision Zero task force that we have here is probably the largest in the state of Florida. With the help of our Vision Zero coordinator, Tara Applebaum, she's able to bring on not only our mayor, but the state attorney, FDOT, the Palm Beach TPA typically participate in these events. We've been recognized by the governor for our strategic effort. And also, I think what's really important is that we bring in the school board and we bring in Palm Beach County, FHP, and other safety council within the area. Next slide. And so in 2019, we spent a lot of effort introducing Vision Zero because this is a fairly new concept and a new idea. And so what we really want is for people to start saying the word Vision Zero, for people to really understand what Vision Zero really means in our community. So we hosted over 40 events in just 2019. It's comprised of something as small as, safety assemblies in high school. We've done some art contests. We actually work with FHP to reenact a crash at Forest Hill High School here in south of the city. Including with that, we did a block party, we did walk to school day, we had a community safety fair that introduced families and, work in conjunction with other events that we have in downtown. We were able to give out thousands of helmets last year and reach many, many people. Next slide, please. And we really can't do that without a little bit of investment in our communications and PR and marketing. And this is not just for Vision Zero, but we're talking about Vision Zero is now a focus among all of our corridor projects. So we work together with, for example, the Kamata Streetscape Project to really emphasize why we approach this type of design and what are the benefits. And so with that, we utilize a lot of those people PR and marketing strategy to reach over 3.4 million people last year. And then, of course, over 220 TV placements. Of course, these are some of the aspects that we focused on last year as we look at how do we want to educate in a media mainstream standpoint. So what we've done this year, because of COVID and because of the unconventional time that we have, I've been holding a series of webinars And as we're approaching a series of webinar on what I call Transportation Tuesday, and on during this 1 hour event in the evening, I typically talk about different transportation projects in the city and what different initiatives, and then allow residents to have a one-on-one connection with me personally and see how we can address their safety concern. The other thing that we've done is we've worked with a nonprofit in the city of West Palm Beach called RISE, and to help us to go door to door and connect with residents who are within the vicinity. We prepared flyers and door hangers for the nonprofit to hand out and be our eyes and ears, as it is a very unconventional time for us. And then ultimately what we've done is we asked the nonprofit to set up a space where it's safe for one, social distancing, but two is to reach communities, and we really target the equity aspect of this, is to reach neighbors and communities that does not have internet access or does not have access to a computer. And so even though this is a Zoom call, very similar to this same platform, we try our very best to connect in a very equitable way. And then lastly, the Transportation Tuesday presentation or webinar is published on, it's streaming live on Facebook, and of course it's going to end up being on YouTube. And that's where a lot of people are consuming content during this time. So that's just a little bit of what we've done last year and how we're shifting our focus through the pandemic with our communications. Next slide. And so we believe really collaborating with our emergency response team. And this is something that we actively worked on, especially when we're working on a traffic calming program in the city. So earlier this year in February, we did a ride along with the fire department looking at various locations, different type of traffic calming devices in the city. And we asked our firefighters and our to traverse these corridor in their trucks, the fire trucks, to see if traffic calming, because it's so important to the residents, is really going to impact and delay the response time. And that's the test that we did. And what we found is, short answer is, not exactly. As we're interviewing our law enforcement, what really impacts response times are actually tree branches, because it's very difficult to traverse the turns. Sign placements, if you have a stop sign or a speed limit sign that's so close to the edge of the road, it's it cause issues. And then lastly, there are potholes. So we know that because of this results, we need to really focus on prioritizing where the responses are typically in the air focus area, and see how we can focus our road resurfacing program because of that. The other thing that I think it's very encouraging to hear is that our firefighters prefer bike lanes. Because parking, on-street parking, is actually really impedes the ability to respond quickly. So they prefer bike lanes because bike lanes are to be free of cars at all time. And then ultimately, there are some other data that we gathered, such as speed humps need to have signs, and you need to have advance warning for those aspects. So next slide, please. The other way, yes. So what have we done in this 2019, right? Our first year as we complete the program. We developed a speed hump program. It's a quick summary. And we're targeting 50 speed humps a year and looking at it from a corridor connectivity. Not so much as we know where the cut through roads are in the city of West Palm Beach. We're very gridded. As long as you cross the railroad, we know that's where people are cutting through. So we're really focused on those connection and those program. Ultimately, we've shifted some of our design. We are the first one to design share streets. And as you can see, if you've been downtown lately, you've probably seen Rosemary Square and Clematis is going through a transformation. And these streets are really designed for pedestrian friendly and larger spaces for people to walk. Within the first year, the data that we've had, because we do have sensor along Clematis streets that predicts and it determines how people are walking in our downtown, we found that it's an increase of over 90%. 90% of walkers present on Clematis after the the streetscape was completed. The other project that we had is upgrading all of our school zones, and this is a federal mandate, but we prioritize it to that we are target to complete by the end of 2021. So right now we're working primarily focused on east of I-95 because we know that's where the walkability areas are at, and ultimately making sure that we have proper signage and flashers along these corridors. Sometimes when we work on school zones and upgrading school zones, we found an opportunity to, one, is to mill and resurface the road, update some ADA, and of course adding in bike facilities whenever we do those type of projects so that we work together as a strategic project. We have a citywide lighting program which prioritizes investments, and that's really important because, you know, when we think of lighting, and I'm an engineer, I think of let's light where area that's dark. But really, when you look at a lighting program that has Vision Zero as a backbone, you're typically looking at where do I want to prioritize that are high crashes? Are there connectivity to transit? Where are, you know, not only low income areas, but areas with low car ownership is very important. And then, of course, those data we gather to determine where our zones and where our priorities to be set. We completed over 10 miles of bike facilities this past year. I'm very happy to say that is and sad at the same time because that's 20% of our network. But we are pushing forward as we're trying to provide more complete streets and multimodal improvements within the city. And then I think lastly, which anybody can agree, walking and biking is probably the most preferred methodology for us to exercise during COVID. And I myself take walks every morning, and I think walkability is very important. We invested over $1 million in 2019 in providing safe walking, really focused on around school zones, connecting sidewalks where there isn't any, and then, of course, improving ADA improvements. And we leverage those dollars with our utilities dollars and with other programs as well. Next slide. And so here's a really quick example of what we've done and before and after data. And I think this is really important. It's like the measurement of what we've done. Does it work? So this is a roundabout and a traffic calming project that we completed in one of our commissioner districts. We're very proud of it. It's approximately 1.2 miles. There's a fire station along there. This is a very traditional, I would say, Florida type of neighborhood. A lot of cul-de-sacs. There's a park on one end and a lot of recreational usage in this area. What we found is the existing typical section is 15 feet, right? 15, 16 feet of asphalt. And of course that our 85th percentile speed before the conversion was 37 miles per hour. And we worked together with AIPP to do the art installation in the center. We also provided a protected bike lane using Zikla separator along this one on 1.2 mile. And then lastly, we've installed a protected roundabout. And this is probably the first one to be installed in Palm Beach County and I dare say the state of Florida, that we are providing safety and protection for bicyclists. Because of this project and because of this data and this implementation of the new complete streets idea and design concept, we are now helping rewrite the roundabout chapter and making recommendations to the MUTCD, which is the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, federal guidance for the rest of the country to model. So we're very proud of this work that we've done. Next slide. And of course, we have a lot of these challenging projects because nearly 80% of the pedestrian-related crashes are actually not at the intersection. They're really mid-blocks, right? People are very interested on just getting across the street. This is an image of a project that we're actively working on, North Broadway from 25th to 45th Street. You guys probably have seen some of this from the US 1 corridor study as the TPA has completed their vision. And really transforming this project. Next slide, please. into a lane elimination project. And I know the term lane elimination could be a little controversial from time to time because when you really don't understand what is the intent and the purpose of lane elimination, you tend to be very, I would say, emotional as it's taking away car capacity from the road. But when you think about creating a safe place for people to walk and bike. And again, we're very supportive of one-way cycle track type of design or multi-use path type of design where you're taking away the biking opportunity away from the road and putting with the people. And I think that's really important to identify here. But looking at the data, our crash data along the corridor is more than 30% of the crashes in this stretch are pedestrian and bicyclists. And so that's our intent is to reduce the crossing space for people to cross the street and strategically place in, mid-block crosswalk where it's needed. And of course, here's are some of our data and how do we do this first year. The healthcare district provide us with some data that we've worked on from comparing 2018 to 2019. As you can see that our crashes have reduced. And the same goes for the West Palm Beach Police Department, where if your Zoom camera is over some of this, you can move it around to take a look at it. But overall, we have reduced and the strategy and the strategic investment with education, engineering, and enforcement really, really works. Next slide. And so what is my inspiration moving forward as we're approaching post-COVID? And really one of the things that has really inspired me is really creating a safe place for kids to learn. And this is what we call a traffic garden. And that is kind of like a park where kids can be there to play and really learn road rules and learn their signs and really transition into, good behavior prior to getting their driver license. Next slide. So we've been working with the school board on this, identifying a piece of property within the city of West Palm Beach and creating a Vision Zero training course, very well received by the school board. We are looking to, moving into final design and a more preliminary design. This is a concept for us to look at creating not only a public space, but a space with purpose that creates education for children. So working with the school board, they are very interested in projects like this because they can actually program school programs and field trips in all of Palm Beach County to talk about Vision Zero as a curriculum in elementary school. So I hope this gives everybody a little bit of inspiration of that these strategies do work and they are, we're moving out of COVID and I'm hoping that we can continue the trend. So I'm here to answer questions if anybody have questions.
Thank you very much, Gwen. Do we have any questions? I don't see any hands raised. I do know that a lot of our municipalities have passed safe street resolutions, Palm Beach Gardens being one of them. So we are on the way to hopefully zero traffic accidents. Wouldn't that be a blessing? Any other comments or questions from the audience? Or our participants? If not, then let me just remind everybody that the next, we have administrative items. Please read through those. And our next meeting is September 17th, 2020. There is no meeting in August. So may I have a motion to to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, everybody.